Broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
The longest Oscar season is finally over. Taylor gives Kesha some money, and in return, Demi throws shade. Oprah sheds money on Weight Watchers, and the reviews are in on Fuller House. That and more with San Yee Yuen now. Let the ranting begin. It is Oscar Sunday night, and we are on Hollywood Boulevard, and I am sitting across from San Yee Yuen.
It is so good to be here, Grant. I'm so excited. It's been a long day, but this will cap it off in just the right way.
Exactly. A nice nightcap on Grant's Rant. Now, San Yee and I know each other from the NBC Page program, but like other folks who have come on our show here, San Yee is a host as well, but San Yee does a lot of other things that we will get into.
Thank you.
So we'll get into everything coming up, but let's talk about the Oscars.
It just went on forever.
It went on. That was the longest show. I was fed up with it, to be honest with you. Like, I went into it, like, knowing it was going to be long. I coached myself. I went out. I had a drink beforehand. Like, I was good. But it just went on for too long. But I can only imagine for you, like, just being an Oscar season in general, with all the predictions, all the press, what has it been like to be living it in the press, living it, like, we're right on Hollywood Boulevard and Oscar night. What's it like?
Yeah, oh my goodness. I feel like it just really began back in December of last year when the SAG Award nominations and Golden Globe nominations were announced in the middle of December, because that was when all the awards buzz really first started getting generated. And, you know, it was just quite interesting to see some discrepancies between the SAG nominations and the Golden Globe nominations and the Oscar nominations. But at the end of the day, it is still a lot of the same repeat characters. And I think Rooney Mara said it best at the Oscar luncheon on February 8th, I think. Yeah. So at the beginning of this month, she just said, wow, award season feels like you're just celebrating the same person's birthday over and over and over again. And other people say it's a lot like prom, where you just dress up and take pictures. So it's like prom every single night.
Yeah. it's kind of like the same people doing and celebrating the same things.
Yeah.
And the same movies. And that's my problem. But that's why I like alternative awards too, like different ones, like, you know, like the Spirit Awards. Like, it's, you know, something different. I feel like they're just the same. Like Leo sitting there waiting for an award every night. Like, I'm like, all right, this is getting kind of tiring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and it also gets a little bit hard reporting too, because I remember there was one week where I had to interview Adam McKay three times within the span of one week. It was the Writers Guild Awards, it was the Ace Eddie Awards for the editors, and it was also Santa Barbara International Film Festival, where he was getting an award with the other directors of the year. But it's just so funny because you see these faces and you're like, oh my goodness, what haven't they been asked already? And what haven't I asked them already? How do I keep it fresh and exciting?
Yeah, no, really. I mean, just too much. It's like, well, we consider it the end now. Now that Oscars have passed, is it over?
Oh gosh, I think now it's the start of like Oscars 2017 of the 89th Oscars.
Well, before we know it, Emmys will be in full swing. So I'm looking out for all the For Your Consideration DVDs. You know, they come in like in droves. So that'll be, hopefully we'll have at least 2 or 3 months before all that.
Yeah, well, what's funny is I just joined SAG last July in 2015. And so this was the first season where I actually got SAG screeners in the mail. And it felt like Christmas every day, just opening my mailbox, getting a new DVD. And it felt really special. It was nice.
It's nice to get those for sure. And if you're hearing noise in the background, that's because we're broadcasting from an Oscar party, basically, that is happening on the floor that we are reporting on. But we're right on the same street, same block as the Oscars, right across the street from all the people. So it's really cool that we get to be here and talk about the Oscars. Let's talk a little bit about what happened in the telecast.
Yeah.
Really odd moment with Stacey Dash.
Oh, gosh. Wait. Remind me what that moment was again. Which one are you talking about?
She walked out and they talked about, you know, she wished everyone a happy Black History Month. You know, there was a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
She was the one that spoke out about, you know, the Oscar is so white controversy and how they shouldn't have Black History Month and all this stuff. But, you know, it was supposed to be a joke. But it was really poorly executed. It was so awkward. It was not a good moment. Not a good look for her or anyone involved.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Yeah, I feel like it's been rough with the whole diversity critiquing. You know, I was reading about how Charlotte Rampling had said something to that. I don't know. It's just, it seems like the whole controversy has spun out of control with the boycott. And I think it was interesting. Again, I'm going to quote Rooney Mara. I just love her so much. At the Oscar luncheon, she actually said, you know what? I know there's that hashtag right now, Oscar so white, but there should also be a hashtag Oscar so straight. And, you know, I think diversity should be welcomed. And what Inarritu ended up saying, you know, that we hopefully won't look at people's race, that it'll just be like hair or hair length. Was that what he said? He said something really good and compelling. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yeah, I can't wait until it's not news when a diverse person gets nominated for something.
Right. Well, on that note, there was a lot of commentary and jokes, all different types of humor about race and about, you know, who's representing who. And it just seemed to get very repetitive for me. It was just tiring after a while. I know that it has to, it's like the elephant in the room. It has to be addressed.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. But it's kind of like, I don't know, to me it just got to be too much.
Yeah. What was interesting that I was watching was, you know, that little montage of African American actors inserted into clips.
Like Whoopi Goldberg and the broom.
Yeah. Chris Rock from The Martian. And I mean, I thought that it was interesting how they wanted to to try that bit of comedy, but you're right. It kind of felt like, oh, this is getting shoved in our faces because we are overtly doing it to address that elephant in the room.
Right. Now, as an Asian American, do you feel sometimes like it's just too much, like you don't, like it's like such a black-white thing, but yet there were no, correct me if I'm wrong, but were there any Asian Americans or Asian folks that were nominated?
Well, so South Korean singer Sumi Jo, then she's this opera singer, and the song from Youth was nominated for Best Original Song, but she didn't even get to perform it. And so it is kind of sad that, oh, hey, here's a nomination for an Asian person. And, you know, South Korea is just so proud of her, and then she doesn't get to perform.
Yeah, I know. There is an opportunity, a missed opportunity, to be able to celebrate diversity in a nominee. Inoni is the first transgender nominated performer, and she was cut. Her performance was cut because of time restraints. She was cut way before today in the telecast. This was when they were, you know, planning out the order of the show. But yet there was enough time for Lady Gaga to perform, and also The Weeknd, Sam Smith, and Dan Grohl.
Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl from, Foo Fighters.
And I was like, Dave, why are you here? But, I mean, you know, I guess someone has to do the what do they call it, the in memoriam. But I was why? I don't know. It was just really, I mean, there was another missed opportunity for them really to say, look, we're still going to move forward with our diversity in our telecast.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I know. It's so funny because you think this is such a good opportunity to elevate diversity at a time of controversy, and then they just make it worse.
Yeah.
But, I mean, hopefully, you know, they're making the moves to try to change that up. I also feel like we can't necessarily just blame the people of this year. This is an ongoing problem of, you know, production companies, studios, they have to greenlight projects with diverse talent. Otherwise, you really do only have, Concussion with Will Smith or Straight Outta Compton. You don't have many movies with diverse talent that you can choose from.
Right. Mm-hmm. I do agree. Now, overall, the show, it looked good to me. I liked the everything, the way it was set up, the stage and everything. Kind of classic, you know, it was well done. You know, I thought Gaga's performance was very powerful. She looks good. Not a huge fan of the song because I like, you know, I like Party Gaga. I like Just Dance Gaga.
Me too. I like the Just Dance days. Yeah, vintage Gaga.
Yeah, exactly. But I do like the new classy Gaga, too. Like the, you know, the Versace suits and stuff like that. Like, she does look good and everything. But, you know, I mean, it was a very powerful performance nonetheless. But Ryan Seacrest was, you know, there was some drama with her on the carpet. I mean, with him on the carpet. And they were out there, and, you know, famously, Sacha Baron Cohen had dumped ashes on Ryan Seacrest. I believe it was 2 years ago.
Oh, some red carpet. Okay. Sounds familiar.
Yeah. So this time around, Sacha was next to be interviewed by Ryan Seacrest, and Ryan said no.
Yeah.
It was like, no, So then he ended up interviewing Lady Gaga, and then that's when Sasha crashed the interview and came over, and they hugged it out. They did like a bro hug.
Okay.
But I'm like, come on, Ryan, like, that's your job. Like, would you ever deny someone an interview?
Yeah, that's interesting, because you know what, wait, so Ryan was reporting for E!, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, did he have a co-host for the night, or was him alone?
Well, you know, I didn't catch that portion of the telecast, but usually they stick Juliana somewhere in a box.
I know,
to interview, like, a child actor.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I feel like with Ryan, if he was uncomfortable and he knew that Sasha was in attendance, he should have made that, you know, super, super, super known to the producers so that when the time came that they saw Sasha coming, you know, just maybe do a little switch out. Because E! Has so many hosts that are all over the red carpet on this big day. And so, you know, maybe people would have thought Ryan stepped out for a bathroom break and it wouldn't have been so prominent.
It could have been much more well produced. That, yeah, that was definitely someone messed that one up.
Yeah, and it's always sad because I love Ryan Seacrest so much. He was like my idol. I really like how he just overcame a lot of obstacles. He used to be really chubby and then lost all the weight, came out to pursue his dreams and, you know, took over American Idol and collaborated with his idols too, with Casey Kasem and Dick Clark.
Yeah.
And just really made it happen. But then he did give us the Kardashians.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know. Not they're not well liked on this show. So what were a few highlights for you overall as we look at the night? I mean, I'll tell you mine real quick.
Yeah.
But Priyanka Chopra, I thought she looked beautiful. I thought she just like had such a nice appearance.
Yeah.
It was a classic beauty, beautiful. And I thought Sam Smith looked very dashing in his suit. And his musical performance was great too. I'm not a huge Sam Smith fan, but tonight I was like, well, okay, all right. Yeah. Like I really saw finally. I feel like what everyone's seen in him. You know, I kind of have a similar feeling with like Adele. Like Adele is very, you know, very talented, just not my type of music.
Yeah.
You know, this was just not my total flavor, but I can totally respect and see the talent there. Mm-hmm. But I like Sam Smith tonight. That's so, yeah, I'm giving him a little tip of my hat. So good for you, both of them.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's so funny that you say that because some people say, oh, Sam Smith is the male Adele or Adele is the female Sam Smith. They both sing about these, you know, horrible breakups that they go through and evoke all this pain. But so we saw Sam Smith at the Oscar luncheon and he did look like he dropped a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if he just wanted to get in shape for the Oscars or has been super stressed and has been flying around everywhere.
He did look very LA-ified to me.
Yeah.
It looks like he had like got a stylist, got a good workout plan in motion. Like he looked like he was like, you know, that someone took him under their wing. It was like, we're gonna like make you the next Hollywood kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how I first saw him, I was like, damn, like someone got to him.
Well, for me, let's see. It's so funny because one of my coworkers who was sitting in the editing room, then the first thing she texted me was, oh my gosh, I hate Alicia Vikander's dress. But so I couldn't wait to see what it looked like. And I was just like, wait, no, I love it. And someone else on Twitter.
What did her dress look like?
So it was yellow. And someone on Twitter posted up a picture of her next to a picture of Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh,
and they're like, she is.
Haters.
She's straight up channeling a Disney princess right now. And I was just so happy when she won because, you know, she's 27 years old. She gives a thank you speech about her parents and how they taught her to believe that anything is possible. And I think moments like those are the ones that give you chills and that give the little girls and boys watching who have dreams today just chills and inspiration. And she doesn't seem jaded at all from the industry because, you know, she kind of came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this past year she came out with Danish Girl and Ex Machina, you know, was nominated for both at the Golden Globes. And so not only was the Hollywood Foreign Press Association just really recognizing her, but then, you know, she just got off the ground with all the Oscar buzz too. And I think everyone just thought she was the most charming ingenue ever.
Yeah, no, she's in a good, very good spot right now, I would say.
Yeah. And then her co-star, Eddie Redmayne, is definitely one of my favorite actors in Hollywood. He's always just so charming, also got that British charm, and he always likes to stop and talk to everyone, and when he can't talk to everyone on a red carpet line, he'll look very apologetic and still, like, very nod bashfully, whereas there's some other actors who just don't even turn when their names are being called and microphones are in their faces.
Wow, yeah. Well, he seems very respectful and he's, like, a villain big favorite right now. Like, he's like, I mean, everyone loves him right now, I feel like. Eddie Redmayne is in also a very good spot in Hollywood. Yeah. Good for them. Good for them. Yeah, young Hollywood is, I feel like, you know, pretty strong right now, you know, just in general. So, interesting.
Well, and how cute was Jacob Tremblay when Star Wars, the BB-8 and R2-D2 came out, and he was just jumping over his seat. I was like, that's a GIF moment. And sure enough, Twitter blew up.
Oh, I bet. But, you know, I have to say, whoever, the director took some really good shots. They got good moments with, like, the selfies and stuff. Yeah. I think I saw too much of Sofia Vergara, though.
Oh, yeah.
She was, like, all over that telecast. Like, okay, well, who else is there?
I know. It's funny, because it's like, wait, is she nominated? People will start wondering. Yeah. They're like, no, she's not. But they keep on flashing her. Maybe she just has really good reactions.
Yeah, I guess so. Expressive face. She's a beautiful woman, but, yeah, she's not, like, when I think of, like, Hollywood film actresses, I really don't think of her. To me, she's more of a TV actress,
yeah,
just because of
her
role on Modern Family. Like, in general, like, I mean, when you think of, when you look at people's film catalogs, hers is not that lengthy compared to other people in that room. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying. So let's talk about another woman who is out there, and you know, she's not in such a good place right now, like a lot of these people. You know, Kesha, I have to talk about Kesha. At our Melvin fan, Brittany, she tweeted me and she said that, oh, blank, shots fired, I need this address on all podcasts. And so she wants us to talk about Demi Lovato going after Taylor Swift for donating some money, $250,000, to Kesha. And Kesha has been, as we know at this point, she's in a tough spot. She's basically, she's alleged that Dr. Luke drugged and raped her, and that the judge found it unnecessary for her to break her contract with him and with Sony. However, now she can move forward with producing without him, but she still has to be under the Sony contract. So, of course, like, a lot of people in Hollywood have a lot to say about this. Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I think it's shameful that the judge didn't allow her to be able to break free.
Yes, and the judge was a woman. New York Supreme Court Justice Shirley Conreich. Cornreich. Oh, gosh. Well, her name doesn't deserve to be pronounced properly.
Shame on her. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, it just for, like, alone, just, like, let the girl out of her contract. Like, you know, I mean, whether you're going to convict Dr. Luke or not, like, you know, just do the right thing. The girl doesn't want to work in that environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, he and Sony have held her career hostage for years now.
Yeah.
So it's just a shame. I mean, I enjoy me some Kesha every once in a while, but I find, like, her music, though, with me, has a very short shelf life.
Oh.
Like, I enjoy her music. I listen to her music, like, that's one of the songs for, like, a month, and then, like, it just expires with me.
Yeah, but that's kind of like me, too. Well, I kind of tend to have, like, an album of the month, an unofficial album of the month club where I'm the only member, and I'll just go on Spotify and be like, oh, hey, this month is Justin Bieber, this month is One Direction, and I'm just admitting that I love, like, all pop and top 40s.
Yes.
So anything I can groove to that gets me, like, up in the mornings, and Kesha was definitely my album of the month, I think, one September in 2013 or 2012,
in the day. Yes. I just love that fans laid out, like, mounds of glitter for her to walk through to go to the court case to go to court. I just love that. Because I remember someone once mentioned to me they saw her perform in London, and that they had, like, these people who were, like, artists, like, ingest, like this glitter substance, and then they would throw it up outside of the venue.
Oh,
so people
man.
Were, like, throwing up glitter for a Kesha concert. I was like, that is just something else. Like, that is just another level.
Yeah, I think if people did that for me, I would be concerned. I would say, oh gosh, how can I live with myself with people, like, doing this?
It was quite odd, but yet nothing seems to surprise me anymore. But yeah, and then, you know, there's a lot of controversy. Like, Demi Lovato had a lot to say about Taylor, and she just thinks that people miss the point of just giving money. This, you know, why don't you go to Capitol Hill and speak out about this versus just cutting a check? So it's more like, you know, is it money over action? You know, I think that Taylor's showing her support, but Taylor has to be careful with what she does and what she says in this business.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it would be, you know, it would be ballsy of her to do really anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would probably be more along the lines of, like, you know, the right thing to do in a way, but she has to watch out for herself, too. I mean,
Yeah, gosh, she does have such a big platform, so many eyes on her. And, you know, I think I remember when she was filming the Out of the Woods music video in Australia, where some people were blowing up about how, you know, she was, I don't know what it was, like the crew was parking and they were in the vicinity of endangered bird species and there were environmentalists protesting against her. So I don't know, I think it's hard, yeah, when you do have all eyes on you, then every single movie make is really critical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Demi Lovato, didn't she used to be best friends with Selena Gomez back when they were both in Barney and Friends, mm-hmm. and then they both came up through the Disney circuit together, Sunny with a Chance for Demi and Wizards of Waverly Place for Selena. But somewhere along the way, they just kind of split off and apparently weren't friends anymore, and Selena was talking about how you grow apart from people, and then all of a sudden Selena and Taylor are best friends mm-hmm. everywhere.
Ooh, so you think that might have something to do with some of this?
Yeah, I don't know, because, you know, it's like they probably see each other at all the award shows, because yeah. they run the same music circles, and at the Grammys, you see, like, Selena and Taylor just,
yeah.
like, so happy and buddy-buddy, and then Demi's there with Wilmer Valderrama, and...
You know, it could be worse, worse.
Yeah, oh gosh, yes. Yeah.
Well, another person who's... you know, it could be in better shape, but we're not feeling too bad for her. Oprah. Oprah, do you want to take a guess at how much Oprah is supposed to be worth? How much it's reportedly, how much she's reportedly worth?
Or is it in the billions? I'm going to guess.
In the billions.
Billions, 24 billion.
Actually, it's only 3 billion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I went too high.
Yeah, 3 billion, though. No one's feeling too bad for her, but Weight Watchers, the fourth quarter numbers came out, and the whole company was down 21% drop.
Oh.
However, she's lost some money. Yes, she has. She invested $43.2 million for a 10% stake, and she lost $24 million at this point by looking at those numbers. However, Weight Watchers launched all their Oprah stuff, it seems to me, in January, like for the new year, you know, New Year's. So that's when, like, the commercials rolled out, and she started yelling about how she eats bread every day. Like, you know, I was like, okay, Oprah, all right. So that's not part of the fourth quarter. So I think Oprah and the numbers of Weight Watchers are going to be just fine when the first quarter wraps.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the fourth quarter for any type of weight loss company is going to be tough. That's the worst time of year. It's right after Thanksgiving. Like, people aren't caring about weight loss. They're not going to be joining Weight Watchers then, for the most part. You know what I mean? But for the first quarter, that has to be their biggest quarter. So, you know, I want to count Oprah out just yet.
Yeah. And plus, I feel like for her, I remember when she first launched OWN and its first year was the toughest. But then, you know, it's still going strong right now.
Yeah, it's in a good shape right now.
Yeah, and isn't she always the one who says, you know, you really develop tenacity and resilience from failure and fallbacks. And so she just learns from obstacles in her way.
Yeah, it's still inspiring to me. And at the end of the day, even if she sold her stock now after the loss, she would only lose 1% of her worth. So Weight Watchers isn't hurting Oprah too bad.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling too bad for her.
It's like a drop in the bucket.
Yep, another thing. Have you seen Fuller House?
Oh my gosh, I watched it just for you, for this podcast.
Oh good, good. This show has a habit of making people watch things. I like it.
Well, it's funny, I wanted to watch it too. It's just... because I loved Full House, but, you know, it was the night before the Oscars, and I was like, oh my gosh, 1,000 things to do. But I went, and I had dinner. I made, like, a smoothie and put granola in it, and then just propped my feet up and watched Fuller House. And it actually, you know, I have some complaints about it, but for the most part, it was still feel good. I was like, oh, it made me feel, like, warm and fuzzy.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I had this weird thing, because I was watching that, and I was slipping between that and catching up on Mob Wives.
Oh.
Now, two completely different shows. One of them is fighting and screaming, and another is like the thumbs up symbol and thumbs up and, like, you know, simple humor. So it was like kind of like a weird, like, mind screw up for me to watch that. But I enjoyed the first episode for what it was. The show is very lame, I will say that.
Yeah, I had high expectations, even though I read bad reviews for it. I mean, I just think there was something magical about the first, the original Full House. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to reinvent it or bring it back, then it did feel kind of campy. I felt like it was rough that the characters were just explaining and expounding all of their current jobs and their previous circumstances. Yeah. It just felt a little bit forced in.
Yeah, it was. I was like, this is one of those things where you can argue perhaps something should be just left alone. Like, Netflix also brought back Arrested Development, which had a not-so-good season on there, and I love that show, and I amped up for that. I was so excited, and it was just kind of really disappointing in general to see what happened. That. So maybe sometimes it's good to just kind of let things go. Like, even with, like, the ABC soaps, One Life to Live and All My Children, they brought those shows back on a digital platform.
Oh, that's right.
And it just didn't really, it wasn't the same show. You know, sometimes things are just kind of leave them be.
Yeah, no, that's how I felt the minute Bob Saget came back on screen, and he didn't seem fully into the show, really.
He didn't.
And then that's when I thought, this would have been great as a one-time reunion little standalone episode special.
I thought the same thing. You know, the show was kind of cool to see come back, and I was speaking with a friend, and he said he had a hard time getting into it because he just knows so much about the current cast and their personal lives. Like, Jodie, you know, had, you know, a drug problem that she's now sober and she looks great.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy for that. She got her life on track and she looks fantastic. But, you know, like, Candace Cameron, she's on The View, which is, everyone knows it's a show, like, I absolutely can't stand. But at the same time, she's also, you know, she's very heavy in her religion, which I respect, but she's a little too polarizing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so it's kind of like, and then Bob Saget, like, I feel like there's two Bob Saget. It's like one who was on the show when I was a kid, and now that I know him as an adult, like, to me it was just like dirty jokester Bob on the show, and I like forgot that he liked to clean. I was like, this is weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It felt like we were fitting him back into this like cookie cutter shape that we had in the 90s.
Yeah.
And he wasn't fitting that anymore. You know who I actually thought was the best? I thought Kimmy Gibbler, Andrea Barber, was still the best. Like, she still looks the same. She's just she has the essence of Kimmy.
Yeah.
And she still had that, and she was, she's still, you know, giving it her all.
She was. when everyone else was sitting on that table, like, all right, let's do this reunion, she was like, I'm working, let's do it, Kimmy's back. Like, she was into it. So, like, I give her credit for that. So, for those who haven't watched, you know, the main legacy cast is hardly seen at all, with the exception of DJ and Stephanie and Kimmy Gibbler. It's a lot of child actors. Mm-hmm. You know, there's baby humor. You know, it's like, you know, it's kind of like the reverse of what it was. Instead of three daughters, now it's three sons that DJ has. But I mean, I really don't understand why they couldn't integrate the legacy cast more. What are they doing? At least John Stamos is getting a producer credit out of it. I know he's got his own show on Fox, and he's actually the more successful one at the moment, TV-wise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I feel like, you know, why couldn't they integrate, like, you know, Lori Loughlin, I'm sure she'd be more than happy to do it.
Yeah, actually, it was funny because at one point when I don't want to spoil anything too much, but when it Danny and Joey and Becky are like, oh, hey, actually, we'll cancel things and try to pitch in and help out. Like, a part of me was almost like, ooh, is that really what's going to happen?
Same.
Is that why it's called Fuller House? Because it's all of them all together. That would rock.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that they're out there working. I know Lori's got her TV movies and stuff like that. But I feel like, you know, they could set a schedule like they do with Arrested Development and be like, you know, we're going to shoot for these 6 weeks, like, you know, that's it. But I don't know. I mean, it's okay. And I actually, like, really, I'm enjoying watching it because I think it's an easy watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a light show. It's, like, it's cute. It's just kind of something just to put on. I don't have to be completely focused. And it's not very intense. I feel like there's enough intensity on TV right now. It's just a simple watch.
Yeah, that's how I feel, too. You're exactly right. See, that's why I remember, even though I was a little disappointed with some parts still when it was over. I was happy I watched it. I was just like, yeah, now I'm in the know. And part of it.
Well, I'm going to finish it. Do you think you're going to finish the season?
All right, well, what's funny is when I was up in San Francisco last September for my mom's birthday, I went to a San Francisco Giants game, my favorite baseball team in the world. And, you know, I was free during the day, so I went to day game. And then they ended up filming a scene for Fuller House where DJ and the guy she's with are both at a game at the game with her son. And then they're on the kiss cam and the guy won't kiss her. So we have to, like, boo really loudly. So I might go and look out for that episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to see where I am in the crowd of, like, 42,000.
Yeah, I am going to finish it just because.
Yeah.
Just because.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
So the Oscar party is over, and we've talked all about our hot topics here. So let's talk more about you.
Okay.
Now, we were good friends within the NBC Page program, The Tonight Show, and I think we connected on a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, when I think back to the Page program, you definitely stand out in my mind as one of the people who I just felt, you know, I clicked the most with.
Yeah, we had some good chats because we had a lot of downtime on that, working on The Tonight Show and stuff like that. So we would have nothing but time sometimes to chat or, like, deal with, like, disgruntled audience members.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, those memories.
Yeah. So once the NBC Page program wrapped for you, what were you up to after that?
Yeah.
Remind me.
Well, actually, I remember when we would chat when I took on that assignment in NBC Digital Entertainment.
Yes.
And you were there, too, helping on the project with The Biggest Loser, even though you are so fit. And it's so funny how you're working on The Biggest Loser for a really long time.
I was known as The Biggest Loser Page.
Well, yeah, then I just remember I would stop by your cubicle and tell you, like, oh man, I don't know if I can do an office job. Like, yeah. I just want to be auditioning and freelancing and just see what comes of it. Because I think for me, I just believe that I could be a good assistant in the entertainment industry, but it was always a plan B in my mind. And plan A was always, oh, pursue what I love, pursue acting and reporting and writing, being creative, and not scheduling someone else's meetings. So.
Yeah, oh, I know, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm still doing that till this day.
Oh, oh, no. But the horizon is bright.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, yeah. So after the Page program, I just decided, you know, gamble on myself, take that chance. And I remember it was scary because I didn't have full-time work lined up. I really just went and, you know, was submitting myself on LA Casting, Actors Access, doing, like, little commercials and webisode projects and auditioning around wherever I could. And it was just, it was just by chance in January of 2014 that I saw an LA Casting notice come through for the 16th season of Disney Channel Movie Surfers. And this is
an iconic classic.
Yeah, it's this segment, this interstitial that shows up in between the TV shows on Disney Channel. I remember watching it when I was 12 for the first time, coming out of Pirates of the Caribbean, the ride at Disneyland, with my family after our annual trip to Disneyland. Every summer, we always went. We're from San Francisco. So that would be our family trip. Mm-hmm. And we came out of the ride and into the gift shop. And I see this girl who's Korean. And she's interviewing Johnny Depp on the set of the very first Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. And I was just standing there thinking, wow, Disney wants to put someone who looks like me on screen. So that could be me. And I used to be really shy. But I think at that moment, I just thought, oh, if I want to tell stories, I can make it happen. Like, a place like Disney could believe in me. And so in those 12 years, I went and, you know, I was on my high school journalism staff. And in college, I went and tried to produce 3 shows on my own as a one-woman band where I was just, you know, doing all the filming and the interviewing and the editing. And I ended up cobbling together a reel from those college shows. And all the internships I had in news stations, they were nice too. They let me cobble more of the reel. And so when I saw that notice come through January 2014 on LA Casting, I just looked up the casting director, found her website, found her email, because I knew if I submitted myself, I'd be lost in a sea of thousands of submissions. And she was very clear in her breakdown. She said, we're looking for a young Maria Menounos or a young Ryan Seacrest, someone who just can improv and also memorize scripts. But again, be comfortable going off the book and just talking. And so I emailed her and said, this is my dream ever since I was 12. This has been my dream ever since I was 12. Here's my reel. And then 5 minutes later, she emailed me back and she said, I want to meet you first thing Monday because it was Friday. But here, this is where it gets even crazier. So then I got a call that I booked this commercial shoot for Pivot TV. They were doing this Day of Kindness, like this special hashtag. And this is when Pivot TV was first starting to get off the ground. Uh-huh. And so they booked me on the shoot and they were just like, oh yeah, we're filming Monday, like all day in different locations, Pacific Palisades, Santa Monica, Runyon Canyon. And I really wanted to be a part of it. Because I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and he, like, started Pivot and everything, and, or, you know, had a big helping hand in it with Hit Record. But, yeah, so I emailed that guy and said, hey, I have a really important audition that on Monday, but I would still love to work with you. And here's what he said. He was just like, okay, well, we're all traveling together, so I'll make sure that we hit Runyon Canyon around lunchtime. So we'll drive you to your audition in Hollywood. We'll get lunch, have lunch waiting for you when you come back.
Oh my God.
And then, you know, we'll shoot in Runyon.
Do you know how lucky you are? That's so unheard of.
And I was just like, that never would have happened if I was in an office job. If I was in an office job, it would be running out during lunch, like taking an Uber and then like Ubering right back and you being stressed out. And so it was that moment where I thought, hey, you know, it paid to gamble myself, thankfully. And then it got even crazier because when I went on set to shoot for the commercial, I was rehearsing those lines during one of the breaks we had. And one of the other actors, he overheard me and he said, hey, are you trying out for Disney Channel Movie Surfers? Because I just went in for that last week. Here's everything you need to know to be prepared when you get in the room. It was just serendipity on all levels.
It was truly meant to be for you. Like, it was just like laid out. Like, that was one of those things that was just like in the cards for you 100%.
Well, it was just so crazy because I remember it was such a long process. And, you know, I went into audition, waited like about 1.5 months until I heard about the callback with the producers. And then I just remember they gave me this long list of 30 questions to memorize and also be ready to improvise, just interviewing one of the current movie surfers in front of the whole production team. And so I'm such a big fan of sports, even though I'm not athletic at all, but I love ice skating and I love gymnastics. And I felt like for me, hosting was that sport I'd been crafting. Mm-hmm. And just like as a performer, as an ice skater or a gymnast, you have to hit these technical elements that the judges are looking for on their scorecard. So that's like memorizing those questions. But you also have to put your own flavor and personality to it and, you know, just put that passion out there for everyone to see. And if there's a little stumble or a slip, then you get back up right away and keep going, keep powering through. And at the end, you just have to stick the landing. So I remember coming out of that waiting room and my sister was with me and we left and I just had my arms up in a V for victory because I thought I gave him my all and this has been a dream, a lifelong childhood dream. That was like half my life really and then, since I was 12 and I just, I still can't believe it. Then I ended up booking it and, you know, I'm just glad I left with no regrets. I was just like, I put everything I had on the floor and thankfully they wanted me to come back.
When you leave an audition like that and it means like so much to you as it did, how do you mentally leave that in the room and not overanalyze and think about, you know, what was the commentary? Like, what's the time? What did they tell me when I left the room? Like, I questioned myself and read into everything to death.
Yeah.
How do you get past that? Because it means so much to you. You know, you just want it to happen. So how do you get past that and be able to just move on with your day?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's so funny because I think I tapped into that with the hosting side just because it had always been a dream that I'd cultivated for so long that I'd worked through. And I did used to get really, really nervous whenever I had to speak to someone without a script. Like my heart would pound really quickly and, you know, I'd stumble. But I think it's just I worked so hard on working on the craft. And I I just left it feeling happy. Whereas with acting, I get really neurotic. Like, after acting auditions, I'll still overanalyze and be like, oh, gosh, what did that mean? Like, oh, no, did I pause long enough there? So I feel like, thankfully, with the hosting, it was a matter of just, you know, practicing it a lot throughout my many years of taking on different projects. And I think with acting, like, I train, I go to class every week. Right. So it's just... yeah, working that muscle constantly, too. And making sure when it's time to perform, I can just go and do...
True professional. You're a true professional. That makes sense. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about Disney Channel Movie Surfers.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's a cool experience you had over there? And what's that like? Like, how often do you shoot? Like, what can you say?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, what's really neat about Disney is that they do have a lot of cool movies that come out. You know, they have the Disney movies. They have Marvel properties. They have Pixar. And I would have to say one of the coolest experiences I had was in July of 2014, right after I had just signed on with them in April. And so in July, they were like, hey, you know, you got a top secret mission in London. And, like, it's got a code name and everything that we have to use in all our emails. So I didn't even know what shoot I was going on.
Oh, and God, that's serious.
And then I found out, like, just a couple days before when I went to go pick up my wardrobe. And so it was for Avengers, Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just remember thinking, oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. I remembered watching the first Avengers back in senior year of college with my friends in a theater in Cambridge. And we... I remember I, like, left work early that day on a Friday night to go and be wild and watch a movie with my friends. And to think that, oh, you know, just 2 years later, I would be on the set of the second one.
That's unbelievable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And what's even crazier was I remember one of my little odd jobs in between when I first moved to L.A. and before I started the Page program, I was working in development at a production pod on the ABC Disney lot. And we just so happened to be in the same hallway as an editor who edited a lot of ABC films. And he had a big poster that was the Avengers. And he ended up taking it down to make room for another poster, I think for Lincoln, because he worked on that too. And he gave me the Avengers poster. So, and it's really neat. It's one of those double-sided ones. I looked it up on eBay, and I think its value is like $90 or something.
Yeah, I bet.
So it's neat, but it was kind of funny how I just had this Avengers poster in my closet, and then I again end up going on the set.
Another thing that I just find so cool about you is that you went to Harvard. Now, I don't know how many people that went there, and I just am so curious to know what that time of your life was like.
Yeah, it was a little insane. I really didn't think I would go there either.
What did you study there? Because, you know, you do a lot of different things. So, how do you decide, like, what to study, especially at a school like that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question that I asked myself in sophomore fall. I had an identity crisis because we had to declare our majors, and they're called concentrations at Harvard. So we had to declare a concentration, and I was just, you know, waffling between so many different options. I was like, I love to tell stories. So maybe psychology, where I can study people and characters. But then, you know, I was like, oh, I have to do statistics classes and labs. I'll never graduate. And so I'm such a big humanities person. And then I thought, oh, maybe English. But then I saw those prerequisites and how it's like, oh, you just have to read so many canonical texts. Like, there was a Beowulf class.
Oh, man.
I was just like, I just want to do, like, creative writing and enjoy. And, you know, there's a screenwriting class that you can apply for and get into. And then I also liked folklore and mythology. But it was like, I realized I was liking all these little pieces from every department. And we had a dramatic arts option as a minor, but not as a major. And that was really cool because you could cross-register with classes at the American Repertory Theater in Harvard Square, just, right in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could take classes like vocal production and improv with really, really good instructors. Like, I ended up taking a class with Scott Ziegler, who coached Elizabeth Olsen, and he was also a teacher at the, or an instructor at the Atlantic Theater Company in New York, and he was a visiting instructor over at the ART. But anyways, so I was like, you know, how cool would it be if dramatic arts could also, you know, fuel a major. And if I just took many electives from all the different departments I like, and I go and I petition and say, hey, can this be my own major? Can I create my own major? And thankfully, we have a department called the Special Concentrations Department. And I went and I filled out really, really, really long form.
I bet. I can only imagine the stuff that you had to prepare, the amount of information to really argue your case. Anything in academia is such a headache, so I can just imagine.
Well, it's funny because they want to make sure you're serious, so you have to find your own faculty advisor and to sponsor your application, so to speak, and also just talk about a current existing department that wouldn't fulfill your needs, why your proposed curriculum should exist in a liberal arts education landscape. And so I think they give you those hoops, though, to make sure that you're really serious about carrying forward with it.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful that they ended up approving me, because otherwise I would not have been able to graduate in 4 years because I had taken no prerequisites for any department. And I am really thankful, too, that there is now a dramatic arts department at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And I received this invitation in the mail, I think around last year, and they were like, oh, come, we're having a reception to celebrate the inception of this department. Mm. And it just felt neat to be like, hey, I was kind of a part of making sure
that
performing arts is recognized and, you know, students are given the opportunity to tell stories.
Wow. Yeah, you've done so many different things. That's so cool. I like that. I like anyone that's like a self-starter like that, you know? Like, because I had similar stories from when I was in college. I went to two. I transferred from one to the other, and I tried to create little projects, things like that. I just couldn't get too many people excited about that type of stuff, but I know what you're up against when you're trying to really create your own path with these places, and to be able to get everyone to believe in you is another story. So yeah, I have a tremendous respect for that. It's so cool, that you got exactly what you wanted out of that experience. You know, you just tailored it to yourself, like you have with your career, as it sounds. So on top of all we've discussed, you're also reporting for China Central TV, correct?
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
So how long have you been doing that? And just briefly, what's that kind of like? I'm so curious.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, that also happened around the time I was ending the Page program. I think I was ending it October 2013 because I was in October Page. I'd started in October 2012. Mm-hmm. And I remember you're in April Page. Yes. You're in April 2012. And so I remember in September 2013, I just reached out to this company that was producing news pieces that were all about entertainment news and giving it over to China Central TV. And I just reached out to them again with my reel and said, hey, you know, everyone keeps telling me to go move out to the Midwest if I want to do reporting. But I know I want to try to follow in Ryan Seacrest's footsteps and do red carpet reporting. And the only place to do that is in LA. So take a chance on me. And they did. It was so funny. I remember my first red carpet that I went out on. I was just really thrown into the deep end. It was like, I think, for Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Anna Faris, Bill Hader. And they just really said, oh, here, just go out there, ask your questions. Make sure you get interviews. And I was just so thankful that I was even on the carpet. You know, it felt like this surreal experience. And I guess just this, it was almost like fight or flight kicked in. I was like, I'm going to fight and get these interviews.
I had a similar experience in my first carpet too. And I was just kind of like, they're like right there and you're next. And you're like, hold on, wait a minute. Can I put pause on everything? Like, I need to be prepared for this. But it's just kind of like, it's like a fight or flight. You know?
I just
got into it, and it just happened somehow.
Yeah,
I can relate to that. That's fun. It's like kind of like going on a roller coaster without a track, but you save yourself.
Yeah.
And then after that, then you really have that confidence in you. It's just like, you know, you're off and running after something like that.
Yeah, that is funny. And I have like a short roller coaster anecdote too. So I'm very afraid of heights. I hate going on roller coasters. I can't stand them at all. But senior year of college, we had senior week right before graduation. And one of the events was going to Six Flags in Boston. And so I remember going with my friends and I only wanted to do the kiddie rides at Six Flags. And one friend turns around, his name is Chris, and he tells me, you know what, you're going to move to LA after graduation. You have no idea what you're doing, and you're going to have to be fearless. So you have to go on that roller coaster. And he points out the scariest one that goes upside down all around, looks really fast. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it for me. And every single time I'm afraid of something in LA, I'm going to think about how I conquered my fear and rode that roller coaster. Mm. And we rode that roller coaster. I was fine after. In fact, I was like, oh, we should do it again.
Yeah.
And so it was funny. It was like every single time that I was afraid, I remember I was afraid of like cold emailing agencies and just saying, hey, represent me and yeah. take a meeting with me. But then again, I would think, hey, I braved that roller coaster. Like, who cares? Let's see what happens
next.
Send
an email. Yup.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's funny. That's how you have to be. I mean, you just really need to be super aggressive. And that's kind of how I'm in the same place too, my own way. I'm like, do it. Yeah. See what happens. Like, send it and like run away.
I know. Yeah. The runaway. Yes.
Yeah. It's so funny. So let's talk about a few other things that you're up to. So acting, just wrapped two projects you mentioned to me before the show.
Yeah.
One of them, The People versus OJ.
Yes.
Now, that's like a very popular show right now. So you have to go. So what was the other show? And then let's get in deep.
Oh, yeah. So the other show was actually my first pilot season experience. It was a pilot for True TV called Those Who Can't, which is a scripted show about these teachers who are awful teachers and get into all these shenanigans and their students terrorize them too. And I think it was, in December 2014, I had just signed with my new manager, and it was like the first audition that he got me, and I went in the room and I was just really, really thankful that I was even auditioning for this project, and they ended up booking me, and it was just so funny. I think it was like after the week of that year's SAG and Golden Globe nominations, and those nominations are always early call times at like 5 a.m. because they want the news to get to the East Coast on time too. Everyone's waking up. And so it was just this wild week. And I remember that Saturday we filmed and then we waited and waited. And then the show got picked up by True TV and they ordered it to series. And then this past February, it's been crazy because it aired. And then there are posters all over LA, along Trader Joe's and like bus stops. And
a lot of bus stops I've noticed.
Yeah. And it's just so fun. Like, my friends are so sweet. The ones who actually helped me with the audition beforehand, we ran lines, I remember, at the Grove, at the farmer's market at the Grove here in LA. And it was around Christmas time when I was auditioning again, December 2014. And there were these Christmas decorations we wanted to check out at the Grove. And I whip out my script. I'm like, here, you guys run lines with me. And at first, they were just like kind of shy. They're like, there are all these people around looking at us. I was just like, please do it for me. And then they were really sweet and they helped. And so they were the first ones who were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we actually see it on TV now. And they like DVR'd it for me and everything.
Oh, that's nice. No, let's talk about People versus OJ.
Oh, yeah.
So now, describe which episode you were in, and then when did you shoot this?
Okay, so this is hilarious, because I thought I was in the fourth episode, and I had put it in my calendar to watch it the last Tuesday in February. But then the third Tuesday in February, I guess so. Here's what happened. Then Wednesday morning, I wake up and I see like an Instagram tag from someone who just gives shout outs to actors. And he gave a shout out to me. He's like, great seeing you on the episode last night for OJ. I was like, wait, my episode aired? And so that's how I found out. I was like, oh my gosh, if I'd known, I would have watched it too. So I didn't even watch it when it aired. But what was interesting was we shot it back in July of 2015. So just last year. And what was really funny was I remember auditioning for it and then going out to Comic-Con like the next week. And I'm like in Comic-Con just again doing interviews for China Central TV. And the whole time I'm like looking at my phone just hoping to hear something back. And I'm not hearing anything back. And I'm like almost at my breaking point, like talking to my mom on the phone at night saying, oh, I can't handle this anymore. Like, oh, I can't stand it. I know I did a good job. Why isn't anyone calling me? And then the next day, like, I think we're waiting for the press room for the last ship. And then my agent texts me and is just like, hey, you're on hold. Like, you're on avail for this. You're pinned. And I was just like, oh, wow. And then I remember the Monday when we got back from San Diego, my agent texted me and said, you know what? they want to book you, and they want you to go to your wardrobe fitting on Tuesday and shoot on Wednesday. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so whirlwind and crazy. And I had a commercial shoot on that Tuesday too, and a meeting with another agency for other representation. And so it was just, it was so crazy. It was like this really, really cool week. And then I had to report to set super early on Wednesday. And it was so funny. I remember looking next to me in the hair and makeup trailer, and there is David Schwimmer Ross from my favorite show, Friends, ever, favorite show ever. And he's like getting his face just like, I guess, exfoliated or something. But I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's Ross. And later on, I'm in the, like, in the cast van going to set because we were filming our scene at Chin Chin, the actual Chin Chin in Brentwood. They closed it down so we could shoot that day. I was getting off of the van and I was in, like, heels and a dress because I play a hostess. And I have a scene with David Schwimmer where I'm recognizing him as Robert Kardashian. But, of course, I just know him as the OJ guy. Yeah. And it's, like, his first taste of fame. And the little kids are with him. It's Father's Day. And they get this, like, preferential treatment. And so it's this big turning point of, hey, fame.
That was the turn, the beginning of the Kardashian empire, one moment.
Well, so it was crazy. I was getting out of the van, and then he was so sweet. He was just like, here, let me give you a hand. And then he gives me a hand out of the van, and the whole time I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's kissed Jennifer Aniston so many times. It's Ross, it's Ross, it's Ross. And then he goes, oh yeah, by the way, I'm David, and just like shakes my hand. I'm like, I'm San Yee. He's like, San Yee? And I'm like, yeah, thanks. Thanks for making sure you got my name right.
Yeah.
And he was just so much fun. And
That's so cool.
It is really cool.
Especially because, like, you look up to him, you know? Like, you want, like, he's like a TV icon, you know?
Yes, yes. Mm. I mean, I just, again, it's like Friends of that show, I'll always quote. And, you know, it's, I'd love to be in a sitcom like Friends. That's my ultimate goal, to be in, like, very vamped up contemporary, or even more contemporary Friends, where they're not in the 90s.
And a scene like that, how long does something like that take to record?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm trying to remember. I think my call time on set was maybe 7 a.m. And then we did, like, hair and makeup. And then we were on set by 8:30 a.m. and rehearsing, and I think we did our first take around like 10, and we wrapped pretty early, I think. Yeah, then we did the scene a good number of times and different angles and close-ups and everything, and then we wrapped around 3, maybe. I remember we had a really good lunch, and
nice.
Then it was a really cool day. And then I remember it was Wednesday, so I have my class every Wednesday, and I went to class, and it was really neat because we had worked on that scene in class like 2 weeks before, and I got to tell everyone, hey, I actually like booked the role with your help, with like one of my fellow actors who had read with me to rehearse, and you know, we had tried it different times, and I was just like, yeah, it's cool.
That's so neat. I love hearing these stories. You're such a good guest. Thank you for coming in and telling us everything.
Thank you.
I think it's so fascinating. And I think more than anything, you fit the bill of what the show is about. It's about hustling. It's about, you know, getting, booking these jobs and getting stuff happening for yourself and doing it really all by yourself. You know, I mean, like, you know, you're building your own career, and I love that.
Well, I love how we had the show on Oscar night, because I can't wait till we're, you know, getting nominated for our Oscars, and I really am celebrating.
Yes, and who knows, in a couple of years from tonight, who knows where we'll be.
Yes.
But we want to thank you for joining us this evening on this show. I also want to thank all of my listeners for helping us reach 11,000 downloads in under 6 months.
Wow.
So we are on episode 21. The show is doing very well. I want to thank you all. Also, if you want to have us rant about something, let us know. Perhaps you want us to play a game or have an odd question for us. You can always email me at grantspodrants@gmail.com. You can tweet me at grants_rants. And of course, you can always like us on Facebook. Where can we find you online, and how can we follow you and see what's coming up next in your life?
Oh, wow. Well, I always love followers on Instagram. I'm a big Instagram user, always Instagramming from the red carpet. All right, so my Instagram handle is SanYeeY. It's SanYeeY. And you can also tweet me at SanYeeYuan. And I'm sure you'll put all the information up. So
yes,
thank you.
All the information will be below this episode. Cindy, thank you so much for all the chatter about everything Hollywood.
Yeah, it's so fun.
For bonus chatter from this episode, check out Grant's Rants Small Talk on YouTube. This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson.